Richard Address, the director of Jewish Sacred Aging and the host of these podcasts. Thank you very, very much for joining us. We invite you to visit our homepage, jewishsacredaging.com. If you want to contact us, just email us at rabbiaddress@jewishsacredaging.com. And we also invite you to go over to Facebook and click on the Jewish Sacred Aging Facebook page for additional content during the week. One of the issues that we always like to talk about and an experience here on Seekers of Meaning is the idea of being people who are seekers, people who are searching. And it is with pleasure that we welcome one of those seekers and searchers to today's edition of Seekers of Meaning podcast, Regina Wurst, who is the author of a book called Josh, My Story, self-published, available through, obviously, the great God Amazon. And Regina, welcome. Welcome to Seekers of Meaning. How are you today?
Thank you. I'm fine.
Good. So it's a very, very interesting, book. Thank you. I enjoy going through it. As you can see from my several sticky notes here, a couple of things that we want to talk about. But first, who's Josh?
Well, Josh is my nickname in the family, particularly. I'm the oldest of 11. And so for years, that's what my siblings called me, was Josh. And I've used it for other things too. When I was a teenager, I was teaching religion to a couple of younger girls whose families asked me to do that because I was always very interested in religion and I read a lot of books. And so I was teaching these kids every week. And I was sitting in our living room one day talking to my sister Margaret, who's a year younger than I am. And I was telling her all about how I was teaching them about Jesus as a Jewish man. I was particularly interested in him being Jewish. And so I was reading books about that and telling Margaret about it. And she all of a sudden looked at me and said, "Regina, I'm giving you your Jewish name. It's Joshua." And I thought, well, number one, I was a little surprised that I was getting a Jewish name right then. And then I was also surprised. I told her, you know, that's not a girl's name. That's a boy's name. And then my mother overheard us from the kitchen, which wasn't that close to where we were, but she was listening apparently. And she yelled, "Regina, she's giving you that name because you break down walls." And we all knew about Joshua and Jericho. So I said, okay. And then they started calling me that. Called me Josh. My sister called me my Joshua, and my brothers called me Josh. And they still do, by the way, all these years later. It's been a long time. And I really liked it. And somehow I thought it fit me, other than it being a boy's name, but I thought it fit me. And I actually, when I converted to Judaism, I actually would have taken it as my Jewish name if I could have, but I thought maybe it wasn't appropriate to take a boy's name. So I took Malka instead, which is my first name, okay. Regina Malka, same name. So yeah, that's where I got it from.
So you write at the end of the book, which is where I want to start, that I offer this book to you as a baby boomer saga, a tale of survival, a conversion journey, a spiritual quest, or simply the life of a mid-century Oakland girl nicknamed Josh. For people who read this book, this is a real journey of discovery, of searching through a variety of different, challenges. For those of us who remember the 1960s and that period of time when things were even crazier than they are now, it's a very, very interesting story and development of your life from that revolutionary radical in Oakland, growing up in Oakland, California, coming out of a parochial school education to your involvement with a synagogue in California. Why Judaism? Why at the end of all this journey did you choose Judaism?
Well, I don't think I chose it. I think it chose me, quite frankly. Okay. I yeah, it's I was actually involved in the Catholic Church, tried to go back to the Catholic Church in my early 40s, and I had four children. And I wasn't able to do it for various reasons. I was very upset and dissatisfied. So I prayed really hard that I could find a community that I fit into, that I felt good in, that I could raise my children in. And I couldn't see it. I was in that central, you know, San Joaquin Valley in California and Fresno. And I just couldn't see a community. I tried several. And then I just happened to bump into Rabbi Siegel, Rabbi Robert Siegel. And I just fell into Temple Beth Israel in Fresno, just kind of almost by accident. And I was a little resistant at first. See, I didn't realize that you could actually convert to Judaism. I didn't know that. I thought you had to either be born into it or you had to marry somebody who was Jewish, and then you could convert. But I didn't really know that you could just go convert to Judaism. So that came as a surprise to me. And Rabbi Siegel offered that the first time I met with him, that it was possible to convert. And I was pretty shocked by it, quite frankly. But the thing is that I loved it. And when I was growing up, I suppose this is a little hard to, maybe it's a little hard to understand, but I always felt like I had sort of a Jewish person inside of me ever since I was little, because most of my friends all the way from when I was preschool were Jewish. My best friend when I was a preschooler was Jewish, and all except for when I was in parochial school, awful lot of my friends were Jewish. And so I tended to like to hang around with Jewish friends. My best, one of my best friends in terms of families lived around the block from me growing up, and they were Orthodox. And I used to go to their house a lot, take care of their kids and drive their kids to religious school. And I went to my first Seder at their house when I was a teenager. And I just gravitated towards Judaism, not knowing that I actually could be Jewish. But I felt that, and then I heard people tell me off and on during my younger years that my last name was a Jewish name. And I didn't really know that. The worst have been in this country for since probably the early 1800s. And they came over kind of under circumstances where they cut off from their past, and we couldn't trace them. I haven't been able to trace them, you know, with genealogy. But from what I can tell, the last couple to stay in Europe was probably Jewish from their names and from what I can tell. And then people were just saying it's a Jewish name. And then people told me at one point that I was denying my Jewish heritage by saying I wasn't Jewish. And I said, well, I didn't know I had any Jewish heritage to deny. So I don't know. It just kind of is the way life worked out. And I must tell you that I'm thrilled. I'm absolutely thrilled. I don't know what I'd do without the Jewish community and Judaism. It's meant the world to me. So very happy it happened.
Tell me, you write about significant moments in your life, obviously transitional, pivotal moments. One of them being 1969, mm-hmm. which I actually remember. I know 69-70 was a very important year in my life as well. What was so pivotal? What was happening to you in 1969 that you spend significant amount of time writing about it? And you basically say this was an important year.
Well, it was the year I turned 18 and graduated from high school. So what way was I going to go? I was supposed to go to college. I was a good student. Yeah, and I got good grades, good SAT scores, got into the University of California right out of high school, but I didn't go. I was somewhat upset because my family was having a lot of troubles. I said I was the oldest of a large family. My dad was mentally ill, and there was a lot of challenges, you know. And then also, the world seemed to me to be in upheaval, and I was pretty sensitive. And there were the assassinations of, you know, the Kennedys and Martin Luther King Jr., and there was the Vietnam War, and all the things and all the radical movements starting, you know, that are going on, have gone on, you know, our whole life. So I just felt that I needed to participate. Part of my protest was against my own personal life. I wasn't real happy with my own personal life. But then also, I just felt, you know, I was really into social justice, and I felt like I should participate somehow. Not that I really understood what was going on all that well, but you learn, you know. I was 18, so it kind of launched me on the trajectory of being a radical and social activist.
Well, you spend a significant amount of time in the book talking about, I mean, somebody may be hearing this and say, well, she maybe have gone to a protest. You did more than a protest. I mean, you were radicalized. No, yes. You were a member, you know, you were with the Communist Party. You went to Cuba, and you write about September 7th, 1971, when you were arrested. So it was probably a little bit more than just, I think I'll go march against the war. You were in the trenches for quite a while, weren't you? And what was that like?
I was in the trenches, and that I went from Catholic peace groups and got real turned off to the Catholic Church because I had trouble with a priest. I mean, there's nothing like having trouble with priests when you're a young woman to get turned off. I mean, it was a huge thing. But, and then I went into other types of peace groups, and I was arrested 4 times at least, went to jail several times. And all in my early 20s, you know, and then went to Cuba at 24 and spent nine weeks there and changed my thinking somewhat. That's where I kind of left the Catholic Church and went and became a communist, and then came back and was a communist for 15 years. But in that period, I kind of wanted to go back to religion in a way, especially when I had a boyfriend who was Palestinian from Ramallah, and I got pregnant and had a baby as a single woman and had her baptized, and wanted to kind of investigate going back to the church, because I kind of missed my roots, and I'd always been religious before I got involved in the communist stuff. But then it didn't work out either, because I had another bad experience. So, you know, it was just hard. It was just really hard. I went through a big existential crisis, quite frankly. It was just very difficult.
What led you out of that crisis? Because as you read the book, I mean, somebody's going to walk away and say, this woman just really just was involved with so much stuff. What can you, and based now looking back, with the luxury of history and time, What were you looking for? What were you searching for? What were you seeking?
I was seeking a view of life that I could live with. I've always been interested in philosophy and big ideas. And as I said, I was very religious when I was younger. I was looking for a way to live, a way to raise my family. And just, I've always been a joiner too, so I needed an organization. And I lost the communist worldview in 1989-90 when it all fell apart. And that was kind of my refuge from the other problem I was having, which was with the Catholic Church. And because I had such terrible experience with another priest, the one that baptized my baby, actually, which was earth-shaking. And I was just so upset for years. And so I was searching for a way to have an organization I could join that had a good worldview. And I don't know if you call it a religious outlook or an ideology or something, but you could see I always had pretty strong ideological organizations I was part of, you know. So I needed a spiritual way forward, actually, is what I really needed. And I feel like, you know, the movie Soul, the Disney Pixar movie Soul, that came out last year. At one point, there's the lost souls running around. They're like big dark blobs, and they're all angry and screaming at you and running away. And that's what I felt like, quite frankly. I felt like a lost soul for a while when my children were young and I was trying to raise my children. And I didn't really have anything to deal with, because what I'd done is I'd gone through a period of moral injury, both what happened to me and what I did. Quite frankly, some of the things I did injured me morally, and some of the things that were done to me injured me morally. And so I needed a way to get out of the shame, the guilt, the fear, the anger, and all the things that were, you know, kind of like eating me up over the years. And I needed a spirituality, but that was what was hard to find, because my ideas about religion were standing in the way. My ideas about my past were standing in the way. And some people tried to help me along the way, particularly in the Catholic sphere. And I had some good women friends, but it was just really difficult and I couldn't do it. So then when I found Judaism, oh my gosh, it was like a whole new lease on life, because, you know, I've been Jewish for over 25 years and it's been a journey the whole time. So it's only been like in the last 3 years, and that's largely because of the congregation I'm in and my current rabbi who's been helping me. The last 3 years, I actually got to the point where I got some therapy, I got some spiritual help, and I've just come out of this whole thing in a very positive light, which is why I was able to write the book, because part of growing and dealing with your spiritual crisis, they call it soul repair, is that you tell your story. And if you tell your story, it's very liberating. And so I got past the fear. I told my story. And I feel so much better now. I feel like, you know, I've shed a lot of those problems. And, you know, my therapist said, you're doing it so late in life, because usually by the time people are in their 60s, they don't want to go through this kind of change. You know, it's hard for them. And I said, yeah, but what's the alternative? I mean, I totally believe that you need to do this while you're still alive in this world. You need to go through your soul repair. You need to go through your change. And you need to get right with God before you die is what I feel, really. You know, I feel it's very important. And so that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to become a better person, go through the soul repair, work on my spiritual life. And I find that extremely fulfilling and important to me. Yeah.
Well, thank you. It takes a tremendous amount of courage to do what you did, to tell your story and to face those fears and the history. I mean, you do quote a favorite book of mine, which is right over there on the shelf that I use all the time, the Gordas book, God Was Not in the Fire. And he writes in that book, one of the differences between Judaism and Christianity, normative Christianity, he says, the belief is you believe and you shall be saved, whereas in Judaism says, search and you'll find meaning, which is a very, very different approach. I mean, you're a living example of exactly what that line is. You spend a significant amount of time in the book, and it's very it's very contemporary right now, talking about clergy abuse. The abuse that you encounter through clergy, which is not only the Catholic Church right now. We're posting this in the end of in December. Liberal Jewish movements are dealing with some of the same revelations, and it cuts to the quick, to the core, very fabric. You walk this walk. You've lived this. You've told your story. You've been through. If there's somebody who may be listening to this either this week or sometime, and you know, on a treadmill 2 months from now, but who has experienced this, what's the one piece of advice that you would give someone who has had to deal with this?
I'd say speak up. Get some support and speak up. Because really, when I got support, particularly, well, from my congregation, but also from SNAP, which is Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests, which is not just for Catholics anymore. It's also for Protestants and Jews. It's pretty interfaith now. And there's also other organizations. You need support and you need to speak up, because I didn't overcome my fears till I spoke up, you know, and I didn't get support till I spoke up. And it's really very important. And I think telling our stories is important, because that's the only way things are going to change. It's basically about the rights of women and children, although men are abused too, but it's mainly about the rights, the continued struggle for the rights of women and children. So that's what I would say. Try to overcome the fear and tell somebody and work on it.
Now, I would imagine that, and from your work in this, not only as a person who experienced it, but also for the organizations that you've been involved with, the more you repress them, the more you bury this, potentially the sicker you can become. Because all that feeling has to go somewhere. You know?
Yeah.
Go somewhere.
You become mentally ill, sure. You know, depression and other things, substance abuse. You know, it's very sad. See, one reason I spoke up is because I was abused as an adult. I was 19 and 30 when it happened. Most of the talk has been about people abused as children up till now. But it's very important that adults speak up too, because and that's why I went through all the serious consequences for me. I just spelled them out, you know, in a lot of detail, because people need to understand it hurts adults too, you know.
Yeah.
And up till now, it's been sort of like the adults were somehow complicit in it because they could, because they were adults. But it's not always that way. There's imbalances of power. There's a violation of professionalism. There's all kinds of things that go into it.
So. You were involved in obviously, as you mentioned, and you write in the book, protests, the war, civil rights, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So here we are, fast forward into 21st century, 2021, 2022. The world is crazy, pandemic, economic injustice, climate is going to who knows where, growing economic divide between those who have resources and those who don't. Systemic racism, whatever. Anti-Semitism is on the rise. Abortion rights are about to be trampled. Why, Regina, why aren't there just massive protests? Like in the old days. What? It just seems as everybody just tired or cynical or giving up.
I don't really see it that way, quite frankly.
Talk to me.
I think there's a lot of young people protesting. I'm not sure that protesting in the streets, I was never sure that it did that much. I think working in the political system is important. I mean, we used to, well, when I was a communist anyway, labor unions were the thing, you know, to work in the labor unions. I still think it was a big mistake to let labor unions go. I think we ought to be doing that, the economic injustice and all, and working people struggling so much. But I think people are working. I do see a lot of activism. I think we need to be political, you know, and be involved in the political system and parties and all the things that people do. I don't see a lack of some of it. I think is maybe misguided. I don't agree with a lot of the politics these days. They call it neo-Marxist. I don't know, but if it is or exactly or not, but I don't agree that people ought to be separated against each other on the basis of their ethnicity or race. Because when I was a communist, we always said that white people and black people should struggle together, should be comrades and work together to work for change. And that's what I still believe in. I still believe in that very strongly. I also, I'm scared about the rise in anti-Semitism. And I think that we probably, my place where I put my energies the most these days is working about on that, doing something. And speaking from the point of view of someone who used to be, I used to be anti-Zionist. I used to be, you know, I didn't support Soviet Jews. I was obviously in a relationship with a Palestinian man. I know where people are coming from these days, particularly on the left. But I, you know, and I don't agree with all of it. And I could say that, you know, I learned that that's misguided, you know, and I support Israel. So probably that's why I put my energies. But I don't know. I think young people are kind of up in arms. And if they're not, they're a little discouraged. And, you know, people get a little depressed at times. But I'm optimistic that we're trying. A lot of people are trying to do something.
So let me, as we run out of time for this, let me ask you, you've been around, you know, the expression is we've been around the block. You've been around several blocks in your life. And, you know, you have all this experience in such a variety of different ways in your story. That's part of your story. And here you are now, you know, active in the synagogue and, you know, 20 some years after formal conversion, etc. Some people would say, okay, this is the time to just sit back and relax. I've lived, what a crazy life I've lived. I'm done. I just want to just leave me alone. Looking forward in your next, God willing, 30, 40 years of life, what do you want? What are you seeking?
Well, I don't know if it's going to be 30 or 40 years. I'm 70. But
okay, better living through chemistry, technology. Go ahead.
What I'm seeking is to finish raising my grandchildren. I've been working on helping raise, or actually raising three grandchildren. I'm going to help finish them up. One's 18, one's 11, one's 8. And so I'm still doing, I have a parent-teacher conference this afternoon. I'm still raising grandchildren, so I want to finish raising them. And then the other thing is that I want to study Torah. I'm finally learning how to study Torah properly. I didn't really understand that. And so I'm reading books about Torah study, and I want to really launch into more religious study and more Hebrew. So that's some of my goals. I mean, I basically want to keep going the way I've been going. I'm not going to let up. And as COVID eases up, I want to get involved in the community again. You know, the kids are in school. When they're in school, I get out and get involved in the community again. I'm tired of staying home. Let's put it that way.
No, that's a great answer, because really, once an activist, I guess always an activist in a variety of different ways. And you do include in the back of the book, picture of you says you live in California and are a doting, I think the direct quote is a doting grandmother. And there's nothing wrong with that. In fact, hey, if you're grandparenting, one of the great blessings of life, and you've given your grandchildren one heck of a legacy. I hope they read this because there's a lot to learn from it. Regina Wurst, author of Josh, My Story, the story, as you say, of a confirmed activist who really walked the walk and talked the talk. So thank you very much, Regina. I wish you much happiness and joy, hatzlacha, as we say in Hebrew, and good health, much good health.
Thank you, Rabbi Address.
So do just take care, and good luck with that parent-teachers conference.
Thank you.
And to all of you, thank you again for watching and joining us on today's edition of Seekers of Meaning, the TV show and podcast of Jewish Sacred Aging. Again, you can contact me at rabbiaddress@jewishsacredaging.com. And if you go to that homepage and scroll down, you'll see a conveniently located donate button. And if you'd like to help support the work that we're doing, just click on that and follow the prompts. Seekers of Meaning is produced at the Broadcast Center of Lubeck and Media Companies in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. And a shout out to our technical wizard, Steve Lubeckin, who's our producer. Again, I'm your host, Rabbi Richard Address, and I look forward to greeting you on our next Seekers of Meaning TV show and podcast. Until that time, stay safe, everybody. Stay healthy. Have a a good holiday season, no matter what you celebrate of all the various holidays. Take care of yourself. Stay safe. Shalom.